Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of The Tap. I am your host, author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. What do we got on tap for today, Andrew?
We have NXT and we have AEW Dynamite, the show after what was positively one of the best pay-per-views that we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
We're going to actually kick it off really quick with NXT today, because we got a few things that we wanted to go over from that, along with then obviously the best segments that we found from Dynamite as well. So I'm going to just actually start off with a couple of things that I wasn't really too fond of from NXT. First off, Mei Ying, her wrestling debut on NXT the other night. We've been waiting to see Mei Ling do something other than sitting in a chair.
Yeah. For like 8 months.
Yeah. And I mean, and she goes up against some enhancement talent, as they like to call it now, but we all know it's a jobber.
Yeah.
And it was such a lackluster match. Like, I was so bored during this. I'm like, can we just scrap that whole gimmick, that whole thing right now? I'm like, and just move on, not having to deal with it ever again, because I was just so unentertained.
I had hopes for the gimmick. I think it could be done well, but yeah, they definitely missed the mark on this.
Big time missed the mark.
Now I know why she hasn't wrestled for 8 months.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah.
The only thing that I actually liked was that she used the tongue and death grip.
Yeah.
To get the win. Because we haven't seen that in for so long.
Yeah, I forgot what it was even called, but yeah,
it was the tongue and death grip. Meng used to use it in WCW.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a cool little callback move there, but yeah,
that was the only cool thing about it. That was the only cool thing about the match.
Nothing else impressive to say on that. Yeah,
nothing at all.
Yeah,
and then we run into the women's tag team title match. And I'm not saying the match itself was bad. I enjoyed the match. I liked how fast paced it was. I like, you know, that Casey and Caden kept coming up so close. I just wish that they would have had the titles dropped and put onto Casey and Caden, because first off, I think that they deserve it. And second of all, they're actually a credible tag team that's been around for a while, not some random thrown together BS that they just decided to do because Io Shirai wasn't in the women's title, regular women's title match picture.
Well, first of all, Caden and Casey were thrown together like that to begin with anyway, because they don't have tag teams.
They've been together for a while now.
I get that. They are established as a tag team. That's completely fine. I'm okay with that. I would have been okay with them dropping the belts to them. I would have been totally fine with that, because I hate the Zoe Stark, Io Shirai thing. But what bothers me about this match is this is your women's tag team titles on NXT, and the only credible person really in this match is Io Shirai. And the other three competitors are like newbies that have been wrestling for like 2 years. Like top.
Well, Caden's been wrestling for a lot longer than that.
Casey's been a jobber up until this tag team thing. So that's my point, is that Zoe Starks, who the hell was she prior to this? Nobody. You know, Caden Carter was a jobber, and Casey Catanzaro was used once every 6 months because she's still learning how to wrestle from American Ninja Warrior. Like, I'm so uninterested in this, which is why I agree with you. They should have dropped the belts there.
My thing with it for them dropping the belts is, yes, Caden and Casey had been thrown together as a team, but they've paid their dues as a tag team. They paid their dues as individuals as well. You know, they've been around for a while.
I agree. They've built up credibility
to be in contention for the tag team titles. I like them too.
Yeah.
And they're legit best friends too. I mean, I see them all the time when it comes to TikTok and, you know, all over each other's Instagrams and stuff like that. They're legit friends. I understand the credibility to build them up. They should have had the titles because Io Shirai, like I said, the only reason I feel like she's in this whole situation is because they didn't want to put Raquel versus Io Shirai right now, and Raquel's the women's champion.
Yeah, because they didn't want to. They have nothing for Io to do. They didn't want to. They didn't want to have Io get beat,
and they didn't want.
And they didn't want her to beat Raquel either. Yeah, exactly. Right.
And they didn't want her to have her just sitting on the sidelines doing absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
So instead, they put her in these stupid skits.
That would have been better. I would have rather you wait 3 months to bring her back until you had something for her.
So now you have her paired up with Zoe Stark. You're putting them together in doing these stupid skits. This is the first time that they've actually competed in a tag team match, I think, since winning the tag team titles? Or maybe they had, maybe this is the second match since they won the tag team titles that they've actually competed in together. But, I mean, realistically, they need to drop these titles. I think that, in general, they need to go back to one set of women's tag team titles for all of WWE, including NXT, and actually have it going back and forth, like people going to the different shows. Either the champions show up on NXT or NXT superstars show up on whatever brand the tag team champions are in on.
We're going to move on from this right after this. I agree with you completely. I think that they never should have made the women's NXT tag titles.
No,
they should have just brought the WWE ones to NXT. That would have solved problems for everybody. That would have made sure that WWE didn't have to book a title that they didn't even want in the first place, and it would also make sure that it got treated with a little more respect, and then they could still have pop-ups on SmackDown and Raw against women's tag teams.
Right, and I mean, not for nothing, they keep on sitting here and doing the exact same thing, and by destroying the other tag teams that are on Raw and SmackDown to begin with, they're breaking them up, and now you have no women's tag team division really on the main brands, and your NXT one actually has a couple of legitimate women's tag teams, but you're not doing anything with any of them.
Yeah. And it's really a shame. I mean, it's not, I mean, congratulations, Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano, but it's a shame that she had to get pregnant right now, because her and Indy Hartwell really were one of the best tag teams on NXT. And it's also a shame that Shotzi got called to the main roster.
Yeah.
Because her and Ember Moon were a pretty good tag team together.
Oh, and that's going to bring me now to my next.
Perfect.
That brings me right over to where I was going to go next with this, was Ember Moon's match against Kaylee Ray. They actually had a good match. I was into it. I liked the match. Kaylee Ray gets the win. The thing that I wanted to call out with this is that Ember Moon is now kind of being like, you know, I know what I need to do to change things around and blah, blah, blah. And I'm begging for a heel turn for Ember Moon right now.
Yeah, please. I'm begging for an entire gimmick change.
Well, that too, but I mean.
I never really liked it to begin with or really got
it. I liked it in the beginning.
No, well, because listen, she's a normal, like, Texas person. There was never really any gimmick around the way that she spoke or talked. She just wore, colored eye contacts and, you know, did her hair up like she was like a woman who lived in the wilderness. Like there was nothing else to the gimmick, which is why I never really got it or connected with it in the first place. I mean, I liked her when she was in NXT, when she faced Asuka right before she won the title.
But yeah,
ever since then,
I haven't been interested. First go around of Ember Moon being in NXT was great. And then when she got called up to the main roster, it was just kind of deflated quickly. And again, it goes back to the fact that Vince didn't watch NXT and has no concept of what was actually working in NXT when these wrestlers got brought up to the main roster. So when they do, it just gets completely, either their gimmicks watered down, yeah, or a completely shitty gimmick.
They lose their identity completely. Yeah. Like, it's like worthless. It's like, what are you even building it for? And it's like, you'd figure once now that NXT is on TV and it's seen by more people that you can't just change people's gimmicks like that anymore, but they do.
Right. And now you had her coming back to NXT after all this stuff though. And you kind of had some sort of hope, especially with her pairing with Shotzi.
Yeah.
And then you take Shotzi away.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so messed up that out of like Ember Moon was already on the main roster, but it was probably her choice. She probably didn't want to go back. But
would you?
Yeah, exactly. So she's the one that asked to come down to NXT in the first place. So but I love this. I love how WWE never ceases to amaze me with the fact that they book somebody losing for like 3 months straight, and then they go, oh yeah, that was the plan all along. It's part of a build-up storyline. Like, they weren't just jobbing her out for the last like 3 months for no reason. Like, they probably decided like 2 weeks ago, hey, you know, Ember Moon, we haven't had her win a match since she lost the tag titles. Let's do something about that. Let's say that she's like itching for a win and it's a way to turn heel and whatever, which is great. Good on them for finding you know, a good way to get out of the hole that they dug themselves into, but you know, whatever.
Right. They screw themselves. They basically take rotten lemons and then they try to make lemonade with it.
Yeah.
That's what they tried to do.
When life gives them lemons, they make beef stew like Andy Milonakis.
Well, no, because here's the thing. Sitting there and saying life gives you lemons, it's not life giving them lemons. They're creating it themselves. They're going to the market, finding the worst possible lemons to grab, and they're grabbing that.
It's almost like a car lemon. It's almost like they're grabbing car lemons. Yeah. Like a lemon of a car is like the biggest piece of crap car that you could possibly find. It's a car that still runs but doesn't look like it should run. You know, So that's exactly what it is. They take the worst things and they try to dress it up like it's a Ferrari, and it doesn't work.
But now going into what happened then with the main event match, because that was another thing that just makes you kind of turn your head and you're like, huh?
Yeah.
So you have MSK defending the tag team titles against Oney Larkin and Danny Burch. And then you have obviously MSK gets the win. And now the pairing that you just put together of Pete Dunne, Ridge Holland, Oney Larkin, Danny Burch, and you have Pete Dunne and Rich Holland attack Larkin and Burch after their match, laying them out. And it's just like, you just brought the, like, everyone together, putting it as like one big team, to put it as a faction. You had potential to make this dominant again, but now all of a sudden you're just going to scrap that and put, you know, Holland and Pete Dunne on their own.
And I just think that that's so dumb, and Pete Dunne especially looks dumb for this, because Pete Dunne, who do you think's taking the pins now that Danny Burch and Oney Larkin aren't there?
Right.
Think it's going to be Big Ridge Holland? I don't think so. It's going to be you. You're going to be taking all the pins, buddy, because you haven't re-signed with them yet. So so you're taking every pin.
Yep. You're SOL, man.
Yeah. You know, which is funny, because Pete Dunne, I believe, is going to re-sign. But, you know, you never know. But it looks good for him re-signing over everyone else.
I will honestly say this. For Pete Dunne, I would say his best bet would not be to stay in NXT. I think he would do great. He would do great in anywhere he goes. But I think that if he went to either NWA or
ROH. I think ROH, he'd do really good in ROH.
ROH he would do really good in. Impact he would do really good.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to go as well. I was thinking Impact also. I forgot about NWA because I don't count it. To me, I'm not going to wish for people to go there, because only 50,000 people watch their show, if that. So,
well,
like,
here's the reason why I said for NWA for him is because he is a bigger name that can bring them.
That's true. He's
bring
a
them
contender.
More viewers. Yeah, and he's somebody that, honestly, you put him against Trevor Murdoch, dude. Yeah. I would be all over that, man. That would be great. I would love to see that as a feud, especially over the NWA World Title.
Yeah,
dude, it's a no doubt. Like,
I don't know who their secondary champion is right now, because they have that other title that's like
last
like United States.
Oh crap! No, it's the TV title, but I think they have the national title and they have the TV title, and I can't remember which one Pope has.
I think it's the one that looks like the United States of America. It's not the TV title. I believe it would be the national. Or it's like the North Atlantic Championship or something. It's something like that. But yeah, so That would be interesting. I could see Pete Dunne coming in and winning that on his first outing, but this is all speculation, of course. But right after this, I would like to quickly, before we move on to AEW, is talk about how they put the two best segments of NXT the last few months. They put them both together.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of enjoyed it.
With Cameron Grimes and the Index.
I loved it. And also, here's another thing I really loved: continuity. I love that when it starts and Cameron Grimes goes to get in the limo and Johnny Gargano's like, huh, who's going to pay for this? And Cameron Grimes just walks in and he's like, hey, Dexter, no hard feelings about our match a year ago, you know? And he's like, are we cool? And he gives him a handshake and it's like, all right, cool. And he's like, you don't even like him. He's like, what's going on here? I love this whole segment. The only thing I didn't like was they had the ref, and it was who I like to call Super Ref, which is the guy that did like the backhand springs and stuff and actually took like a bump, like in one of the NXT matches like a month ago. He was the ref that like got in the middle of a spot and like did a leapfrog and a, you know, roll through and whatever. It was him, but he was like a zombie. I didn't like that, but I really enjoyed the Dexter Lumis. I hated the Indy Hartwell segments, but especially with the TikTok and the, you know, all the people that she doesn't even like there.
Yeah, and then, no, that was going to be my point for it, for that specific piece of it, was like, man, Indy Hartwell's like bachelorette party seemed such a bore. Yeah. I'm like, no wonder why they left to go see what Dexter and Johnny were doing.
I've heard it described as a 12-year-old's birthday party, even though that if you really look at Dexter Lumis's, it was like a 12-year-old's birthday party, but it was awesome. It was cool.
Dude, I would be all over it.
I would too. It was the coolest thing. They went go-kart. I love how Dexter the whole time is Johnny wins like every event that they go to because Dexter basically takes out everybody else. Like during the go-karts, he like swerves into everybody and blocks them off so Gargano could win. Then, and I love it. I love how he just says so much with his like eyebrow raises and his eye movements.
He says so much and like conveys so much without having to say a single word.
Yeah, it's really great. I love how he teaches him how to do an axe throw.
Yes.
And then he's like, yeah, he just puts his arm in place and he looks at him like, all right. And my favorite is I love this segment. I was just nitpicking with the zombie stuff because then at the end he says A and they go, you're Canadian. I guess that was the payoff. I guess that was the payoff to it, but it was really funny. So I love that they play laser tag and they play against some schlubs, the guardians of the indie scene or something. And then you know, like Dexter's like chloroforming them out, and
he like chokes, you know, one out, he hits one of them, chloroforms another, and then the final member, like they all just surround it, and Johnny just like, you give up.
Yeah, but Johnny's like walking around like a 5-year-old kid, and he's like, oh, there's a guy, let me shoot him, acting like Dexter didn't just like put him to sleep. Yep. He was like, oh, look at that guy. And then at the end, we finally get the way high five. He puts it out, and funny enough, Odyssey Jones is randomly there. And Odyssey Jones like gives him like the nudge and pushes him in to Dexter Lumis when he starts to put the hand up. And then they're like, oh.
I like how the end of it was just like, all right, let's get in here, you know, and like kind of like hug it out type of thing. And they did it as a group. And I'm seriously looking at this and I'm like, you know, who's coming back, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah. Austin Theory
is going to come back during that wedding. You know, it's going to happen.
He's going to be like, I object. What about me?
Pretty much.
Johnny, I'm supposed something to be your best friend.
Right. You know, something's going to happen with it all. I mean, nothing ever goes right when it comes to any wedding in wrestling.
It's such a shame because this is the first time ever that they're having a wedding, and I really just wish that something wouldn't happen.
Yes.
like, I've never felt this way before. Normally, I'm like, God, I can't wait for whoever's going to.
Or, like, have something funny happen, but, like, not in a bad way.
Yeah, like, have them still kiss at the end and still have.
No,
like,
not even that, but it's just, like, make it where it's just, like, they now pronounce them like husbands, wives, like in the way.
Yeah.
Like something stupid, you know, but it's funny.
Yeah.
But not something that's like going to mess it up.
Yeah.
But I feel like
Austin Theory to come back.
I think Theory is going to be the one who like messes it up for them. But
that's great. I actually hadn't even thought of that. They actually made me forget about Austin Theory because they haven't even mentioned him or or anything.
He hasn't since like the week after he left. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they still had pictures in the background that says missing and it's a picture of Austin Theory, which I thought is a great attention to detail. It's really funny. But
so
also, they treat this segment with a lot of respect. And they really, this is the one thing that they actually, like, I feel like, try to make sense continuity wise, like all the time.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy, this was my favorite part of NXT this week.
That was a really good show. I liked it. And then we finally get to what I thought was the match of the night was Santos Escobar getting the win over Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes actually did a great job going up against Santos Escobar. And then I know the one part that you hated was Electra Lopez.
Yes.
Body slamming Carmelo on the outside.
Yes. Also, like, who is Electra Lopez? Was it even like thoroughly explained? I bet.
No, not really.
She was just with them all of a sudden. Yeah. And it just makes sense. I get it because they're still doing their endless hit row feud and they need a woman to compete.
Counter B-Fab.
Yeah, B-Fab, B-Fresh. I don't know what her name is. It doesn't matter. sorry.
Be but, out on your butt once this feud is over.
Yeah, exactly. Like the woman that looks nice but doesn't wrestle.
Yeah.
So anyway, I didn't like that. First of all, I do like her being the muscle. I like with the Nick Aldis kind of thing where, you know, his bodyguard is a big woman that like beats everybody up for him.
I feel like she's more jacked and like taller than that entire group though.
Yeah, she is. No, because they're all a bunch of flippy, like they're short guys.
I mean, they're all cruiserweights. It's
well, they are. Yeah, definitely. Which was why this makes sense. And it's so funny. I do enjoy when they have like a big, like strong woman that's like beating up people for the guys. I do like that. But what I hated was that this was a blatant, obvious disqualification because somebody didn't tell this girl. Yeah. Somebody didn't tell her that the ref was looking at her the whole time, that she was posturing like she had just slammed somebody. Like,
well, cause here's the thing. First off, she takes off the red jacket.
Yeah.
And she goes and body slams him. And then like she's standing over him, huffing and puffing, while the ref then turns and looks directly at her. And she's like slowly putting on her jacket.
Yes.
And it's like you know what happened.
Yes, and obviously after Santos Escobar was in the ring and he was dealing with Santos Escobar the whole time, he was in the ring talking to the guy that he was facing in the match. Okay, and then looks over and sees the guy who's just running around now on the ground for no reason next to a woman who's posturing like she just picked up a 200-pound man, you know. So,
but you know what? But the age-old saying goes: you can't call what you don't see.
But come on,
can't call it.
Come on, that's like you know when, like, see, this is what I like about AEW is that somebody like Aubrey Edwards, like even if they don't see it, they can be like, wait a minute, like
I see the
weapon on the ground. They'll be like, wait a minute, there's a weapon in the ring. Like you know how WWE will just be like, oh, I don't see the championship
because well, here's the thing,
all the way
like,
out of the ring.
Like here's the thing, like hey. Aubrey would have sat there and gone like right out of the ring, right in her face, and was just like, did you go ahead and hit him? Did you do this?
Yeah.
Like
and then she probably what would have made a lot more sense is if they would have did that, like had the ref get out of the ring and argue. And then while that was happening, have Santos Escobar hit his finisher and then win, because the ref would have just slid back in and counted like they do all the time.
WWE doesn't do anything that actually makes sense.
That would have been so much easier to do. And yeah, I just wish somebody would have told her to stop posturing when the ref turned around.
Yeah. The only other note that I had when it came to NXT, though, before we jump over, is why the Cruiserweight Champion has been missing for so long. Yes. This actually came out a couple of days ago that Kushida had actually tested positive for COVID and had symptoms. which is why he's been out of action for probably like the last month almost. I wouldn't really say it's been a month, but I think it's been close to a month.
Yeah. Yeah, because they weren't doing anything with him like the first week. And then
he was supposed to have COVID. That match. Well, no, he was supposed to have the match against Roderick Strong for the Cruiserweight title.
Oh, and yeah.
And then he just magically was not there. Like,
and they like didn't even mention it or anything.
Right.
Because I remember that. Yeah, it was supposed to be the following week, and it was supposed to be him versus Roderick Strong, and then it never happened. Yeah, that's right. Wow, yeah, and I didn't know this either. So, you know, I told you right before the podcast started that, you know, that was news to me. So I'm glad at least it's not just because they just don't have anything for him.
No, it wasn't anything with that, because I feel like when he does come back, they're going to put back the whole Roderick Strong Diamond Mine feud against Kushida.
Yeah, again. No offense to Kushida. He's a great wrestler, but he is the most like vanilla character that there's ever been.
No, it's just bad.
Yeah.
I mean,
he needs to
ditch the Back to the Future gimmick,
which he doesn't even really use. He much more like did stuff where he even wore like the like kind of Bret Hart glasses and like other stuff where he actually did more stuff with the Time Splitter gimmick. But like he's they water it down, you know, when you get there, like. He wasn't able, they never really believed in it in the first place, which is fine. I don't really care for it either. But like, yeah, it'd be nice. I'd like to see him. I mean, I guess this is always the answer to everything when there's a bland baby face, is just turn him heel. But I mean, I kind of like to see him in like a kind of tough guy that doesn't speak kind of heel role, where he's just kind of a badass, like sort of like how Finn Balor's like a leather jacket, like, you know, guy just comes out and it's like, wow, that's a badass guy. Like he could really beat somebody up, like even though he's small. Like, so I would like to see him in some sort of gimmick, maybe like that, or maybe where instead of being like, what's his name from Back to the Future, he's the Terminator instead, and he goes back and he's like, you know, sort of the heel version of that gimmick.
They already did that Terminator gimmick thing with Triple H, man.
Ah, yeah, but that doesn't count. Just coming out as the Terminator and then wrestling like Triple H doesn't count.
They're going to turn him into the Shermanator instead.
I'd pay for that.
All right, I digress. Anyway, we're going to move on to AEW Dynamite now. And first off, I want to give kudos to Mick Foley, because openly came out and was just like, WWE, you got a big problem when it comes to AEW, man. Like, yeah. WWE is no longer the place to aspire to be, like, to be when you're a wrestler. And it's very quickly becoming AEW is the place that you aspire to go to.
Yeah, and he said it, if he was younger and he was an upcoming talent, he would probably choose to go to AEW over WWE.
Yeah.
And also, funnily enough, something there's a thing I did want to quickly say about this is that people are like, oh, like Mick Foley has heat like with WWE. And it's like, listen, Mick Foley
doesn't care.
No, and also Mick Foley, like, is the guy that Vince never even wanted to hire. And he was a three-time WWE champion. Even though they were short reigns, he was still a WWE champion three times in one of the most popular, most star-studded rosters that there's ever been. And he's one of the genuinely nicest guys in the world. I really don't think WWE cares that much. They might, some younger like backstage guys might, but like Vince McMahon himself, I don't think cares. Like they're actually friends. He actually enjoys Mick Foley's, you know, company and stuff like that. I doubt that there's really any heat with that. Also, fun fact, Dynamite beat Raw in the ratings this week, is what I had heard just prior to this podcast.
Wait, say that one more time.
They had beat Raw in the ratings, like their ratings for this week, even though they're on separate days, they had more people watch Dynamite than watched Raw this week.
I don't know if that's true.
Okay, if they didn't, then they at least no, because they would have said it was demo. They said it was they beat them in the ratings this week.
Let me I'll double check it because I one of my sites that I follow does the.
I know they definitely beat them on the key demo, 100%. But I'm the news site that I went to didn't specify that it was the demo. They said that it was the actual ratings in general were higher.
I'm not seeing my one site for some reason popping up.
I mean, yeah, I'll try to find it as well if you want to move on through AEW. I'll try.
Yeah, we'll have to go ahead and move on a little bit more from that.
Yeah.
While we try to look it up.
Yeah, I'll tell you when it comes up.
Yeah, I can't find my thing on that for the ratings. It's weird. I don't think that rate, because I saw the ratings for AEW Dynamite, and that was like 1.3, I think. It was 1.319 million viewers for AEW Dynamite, which was their second highest that they've ever had. I saw that, but I didn't see for Raw. I didn't see what the Raw ratings were for this week. And I really don't think that they dropped that low.
I mean,
I know that they dip low, but I mean, they didn't dip that low. I'm pulling up the article right now.
It's clear though that they're looking like WWE.
They were 1.84.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were 1.84 million.
And what was Dynamite?
1.3.
Oh, that's real. No, okay.
They were so close. Maybe it was
SmackDown.
Close.
Maybe they beat SmackDown. Oh no, SmackDown has higher ratings than Raw. SmackDown's higher ratings than Raw. I forgot.
SmackDown's actually still over too.
But that's really close, and they killed them in the demo. So that's really good. They're going to beat them before the end of the year.
Oh, I've been saying that for a while, that they're going to end up overthrowing them when it comes to it. Even though they're not on the same night, they're going to overthrow them.
This seems like WWE. I was going to say that AEW right now seems like WWE during the 83-week loss to, WCW, where WCW was still beating them in the ratings, even though that WWE had the way better product. So I feel like that's the same sort of case now, where WWE is still winning, even though that because AEW is new and they've been consistently putting on good product from the get, that they're slowly creeping up on them. And it's really, really awesome. And it's going even quicker than I thought. I thought AEW was going to plateau, and they kind of did for a little bit during the pandemic, but they really, they're really, They're steadily building their audience. And there are people I have seen that don't watch WWE or have never watched WWE. They are creating new fans that only know what AEW is. There's people that don't know who CM Punk or Adam Cole or Daniel Bryan is, because they've only been watching Dynamite for the last year.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm going to continue in saying it. There are more and more people every single day that are dropping from watching Raw and SmackDown. They either are not watching wrestling at all anymore. Mm-hmm. They are barely clinging to NXT, or they're watching NXT and AEW only. And it's growing more and more that for the AEW fans.
I tell you all the time that if I didn't do this podcast, I would probably only watch AEW and maybe catch NXT once in a while. Like it's unbelievable just how I get excited. I haven't been excited for a wrestling show for real like in like 10 years, like, and or more.
Well, let's get into the show. All right,
sorry. Let's
go. No, it's okay. I didn't mean to cut you off on
that. No, it's just I'm just praising AEW. I'll do it all day if you let me, so let's go.
No, it's all right. We actually opened the show with Malakai Black, which again, his entrance as Malakai Black, it's so creepy. It's actually better than the one that he used as Aleister Black in NXT and even in WWE. I like it a lot better. It's creepier. but it's just, I think the whole persona is good. I like it. I want to see it develop more outside of this whole feud with the Nightmare family. Yep. But he put on a good match against Dustin Rhodes, getting the win.
Which Dustin Rhodes is the only guy that wrestles over 50 that doesn't seem like he's over 50. Like, he still wrestles like somebody in like their late 30s, early 40s. Like, he hits spots and moves and goes fast. Like
he hits the Canadian Destroyer.
Yeah. Oh my.
The dude is like 6 foot something. He's like, I think he's like 6'4", 6'5", something like that.
Tried that once in a match, like his first match in AEW, and he's just been doing it ever since.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
But he's like a 6'5", 6'6", guy, whatever height he is. He's a tall dude, especially like someone like Aleister Black or Malakai Black, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
Have two men of their size.
Yeah.
And he hits the Canadian Destroyer.
And on perfect. Him. It seems, oh God.
I mean, it's so not devastated. As fast. It's yeah, not as fast
seems,
moving.
Yeah, but it seems
but it's
like,
still impactful.
Yeah, that's the point, is that when he hits the impact, it looks like it hurt. You know, like it's I love it. Yeah, this was a great opener for AEW. I did want to say that it's funny you say you like it, Malakai Black's entrance, because I can just imagine how goofy it looks when the lights are on the entire time.
Oh yeah, obviously.
I know.
That's why it's in the dark.
No, but can I just want to think for a second that every single week he has to be like, he has to like run in the dark and hope that he doesn't like, you know, slip or fall or miss his cue before the light turns back on. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, but even like if he wasn't ready, like in the position, like when they turn the lights back on, like it would just look so dumb. Like he has to perfectly get that every time.
But here's the thing when it comes to Malakai Black that I feel like is that he's so good. Like, first off, I feel like he's a little bit of a perfectionist. Yeah. He's very attention oriented. Yes.
Yeah.
He's very detail oriented, I meant to say. Yep. So I feel like, first off, he wouldn't go ahead and kind of cause that issue. But even if he did, I feel like he has like something in his mind already as a work to make it look even cooler that he screwed up.
Yeah, I'm sure he's thought about it.
I'm sure. Here's the two weird parts of this match that were weird, not so good ways. One was that Dustin had knocked Malakai into the ropes, and then like he obviously saw Malakai was not coming at him, but then he tried to do the snap power slam to like air.
Yeah.
Then
I've seen that before. I saw that like done on purpose with Randy Orton one time, where it was purposeful, where the guy held the ropes and then he did the snap power slam motion and then was like, wait, what?
But it was like obvious, like he wasn't coming at you. So like, why did you even try to do that in the first place? Like that didn't make any sense. And then the part that was weird, but kind of cool, but kind of stupid was Malakai Black goes underneath the ring, which he strategically placed Cody Rhodes' boot that he stole
even
from
though
Cody
they
Rhodes.
Don't say that they don't no, they say did. That oh do they no
they did
they, because they said the boot was under the ring and they say that it was Cody's boot, but I don't
they said that he must have strategically placed it
he
there
must
just to,
have but that's just speculation. He didn't say that obviously. He placed it there, and in kayfabe did they just carry Cody's boots under the ring all the time?
Well, no, because the whole thing is that they can't sit there and be like, oh, he definitely did it.
Yeah,
like, he definitely put it there because they didn't see him do it.
It's black magic. Malakai
well, no,
black
not even that, but they didn't see him do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously, if they saw him do it, then they would be like, oh, you know, Malakai Black before the match, like came out and put Cody's boot underneath the ring. Like, you know what I mean?
So, he wins, obviously, to, you know,
it was a great match.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great opener, like I said.
The thing that I'm hating right now is because they announced that they're going to have Malakai Black versus Cody Rhodes again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, come on. I'm like, don't come back and have Cody Rhodes get the win over him. Like, if he's going to face him again, you got to make it where Malakai wins.
Yeah.
Or Malakai gets disqualified. Like, one of those two. Like, you cannot have Cody Rhodes go over.
He's only being built. You should have known this when he came in. He's only being built to get fed to Cody, like everyone else that faces Cody for the first feud. He's just getting built up because America. Okay. Yeah. So Cody's going to win. All right.
I hope. I really hope.
No, I really hope that this is the time where they beat him. All right.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's
go on to the next thing. The next it was actually like right after this segment too. It was right after that. Miro and Eddie Kingston had a video package promo where they're talking about their match. Eddie Kingston was mostly the one who was talking throughout it and saying, you know, God doesn't favor anybody. You know, when it rains, you know, it pours, and it pours on the just and the unjust. And he really like kind of like laid in on this promo and, you know, basically calling out Miro for having to use a low blow in order to get the win. And Miro, in his part of the package, he's talking about, you know, being the redeemer and everything. And then he's just like, yeah, I had to ice my nuts too afterwards. He's like, but consider your nuts redeemed.
That's funny.
It was a great pack. It was a great package in there. And he actually, I forget the exact line, but he actually even mentioned something about like giving, delivering Kingston's nuts to his hot wife. It was like something. You gotta watch the promo because it's just, it's hysterical and I love it, and it's just building up. I feel like it's building up towards another match between them, and I want to see it.
I cannot wait. I please sign me up. I will watch them do a best of seven as long as they keep get the cut promos in between. They have good chemistry in the ring. Their styles really mesh well together because Miro is like the guy that can take a million punches and moves and still get up. And Kingston is the kind of guy that throws all the wild punches and moves out of nowhere. So it just really, I'll pay to see it again.
I would love to see another match with them. Have them go at it again. I don't care. Honestly, put it on Rampage, because here's my one thing, and I'm gonna say this right now. Rampage has gone down when it comes to their viewership numbers, because obviously the first night they had like this astronomical number because everyone knew CM Punk was gonna be on there.
Yep.
But lately you've been only having like three matches and like a promo and
well, that's all you can really have in an hour show, though.
No, I understand that, but your main event matches haven't been that great quality. You're kind of throwing on a good opener.
Yeah. Like it's Andrade this weekend. On Friday.
Andrade and versus Pac. Yeah.
Yeah. They're fine. Which only I think was done because Pac was having issues Pac. I keep saying Pac, but he actually is called Pac, even though X-Pac is spelled like that as well. He actually is Pac. Cause he's got a 12 pack. That's why. That's actually literally why. That's why that's his name.
Any which way. But my point of it is that you have a good match that starts it. You have a match in the middle. And then your main event is not something that's main event quality. It's something that you really want to go and watch. If they're going to start with Andrade versus Pac, look, I'm okay with that. But you got to have a great main event match that can top that. Otherwise, your viewership is just going to go straight downhill after that match.
This is speculation based on Twitter and other secondhand information that Andrade actually isn't happy with the way he's booked right now. And also that somebody tweeted him and said, you know, it's a shame that, you know, it's only your second match and they already put it on Friday Night Heat. And somebody like he actually liked it. He liked the tweet. He thought it was funny. Yeah. But you know, it's because that's hinting at that, even though that they it's nowhere close to Heat. Like I wouldn't even say it was like a Thunder or anything.
It's
like
definitely
that.
Better than Thunder, yeah. But
everything is, but that's true. Heat was better than Thunder.
Velocity was better than Thunder.
Velocity. Oh my God. I couldn't think of the other one. That one. Oh my God.
But no, I mean that's my main point though of it is
velocity,
that they need to
just pop me so hard with that.
Pop Johnny's nuts. No, but I mean like that's my thing when it comes to Rampage is that they need to really amp it up a little bit, and this would be a perfect match to main event it.
Yeah.
Like don't put it on as your first match. Like you got to put something like this as your main event match, because honestly, I loved the match on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And I'm hyped already just seeing that this latest promo. And I'm like, I want another match of it.
Take my money. Sign me up.
Yeah. Put it on the main event of Rampage and like promote it all week, whatever, you know, give it like a good momentum. Cause now I'm going to be like, dude, I got to see Rampage. I got to see Miro versus Kingston again.
Yeah. All right. We spent too much time on this promo. Let's go to the next.
The next one was CM Punk's promo. And he had a decent promo.
You know, it's basically just this rinse and repeat from the last couple of weeks. But the weird thing about this was that I enjoyed, but also didn't make any sense, is Taz is on commentary this week because Excalibur is getting ready for his wedding. And it's funny because he actually, I believe, also had a tweet that said, I'm not sure. I wasn't sure if I should be preparing for my wedding or calling Moxley versus Suzuki.
Yeah.
Which.
CM Punk also cut a, his promo was actually really on point with everything. I liked what he ended up doing. He was actually calling praise and to the Brian Pillman family that were in attendance. And then he was basically saying like what was going to be next for him. He actually alluded to a possible feud with John Moxley or Brian Danielson. And then randomly Taz actually shows up. Well, not shows up, but he was actually on the announce team and he basically called him out and saying, you better keep Team Taz's name out of your mouth. Punk's basically kind of played dumb and was just like, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't even say anything about you. And Taz mentioned about how he, CM Punk was actually referencing Team Taz in other interviews, which, I mean, to be honest, I didn't even hear anything like that about. But CM Punk flat out basically just turned it around and said, okay, Taz, you know, send Hook, send Starks, send, you know, Hobbs. He goes, I'll take them all on. And then throwing insult into injury with it, flat out told Taz, you know, tell them, you know, they were all on in attendance at the announce area. And Punk said, you know, tell them, you know, beat me if you can, but survive if I let you, which was Taz's old moniker, his old promo thing. So it looks like CM Punk is going to be feuding with Team Taz coming up soon. Next, I wanted to go and touch on Ruby. Well, formerly known as Ruby Riott, now Ruby Soho, took on Jamie Hayter, and it was actually a good match. Wasn't great. Ruby definitely got a good welcome from the fans, and this was something that was very much appreciated. I could definitely tell from her. She actually had said in an interview that she'd never really been cheered like that before when it came to AEW All Out, and it really warmed her heart, you know, to see all this and to get that kind of reaction. And it's great. You know, I'm happy for her. And I think this is a good feud for her to start off with Britt Baker. And they had a promo earlier in the night where Ruby Soho actually wound up saying that she was the one who helped Britt Baker break into the business. I really enjoyed the match itself. Ruby Soho getting the win, and then of course Britt Baker and Rebel kind of beating down Ruby immediately afterwards. Rio of all people kind of show up and try to help out. Rio gets just destroyed right away, and then finally you had Chris Statlander come out and make the save, you know, with the steel chair, running off the heel faction. So it looks like we're going to be getting a six woman tag soon. The next item was the Dark Order. They had a big six-man tag against FTR and Sean Spears. It was Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, and Johnny Silver taking the L on this one. Johnny Silver was the one who took the pin. And after the match, you had Evil Uno getting in Johnny Silver's face. And Johnny Silver got annoyed and he shoved Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson made the attack right away. And then this whole thing and the whole eruption of the Dark Order just kind of took sides. It was three on each side on this one, pulling them apart. You had Anna Jay and Ty Conti standing on the ramp in disbelief. They didn't know what to do. It looks like the Dark Order is kind of imploding. and my counterpart had had to leave actually, but he actually had an interesting idea and a concept with this that we were talking about earlier, that the Dark Order, we do feel like they're going to feud for a little bit, where you're going to have Johnny Silver and Alan Angels and I think it's 10, you're going to have them on one side and Alex Reynolds when he comes back, and on the opposite side you're going to have Colt Cabana, you're going to have Stu Grayson, you're going to have Evil Uno. They're going to collide, and I think Alex Reynolds is going to be the one who helps bring Adam Page back, and then Adam Page is going to kind of re-solidify the Dark Order, which is possible. I think personally that you're going to have Alex Reynolds and you're going to have John Silver split off from the Dark Order, and they're going to go on their own. Only time will tell on this one, but I'm actually interested. I'm more interested now to see what's going to happen with the Dark Order than I did when they were starting to feud with the Elite. Speaking of the Elite, you had Kenny Omega and the entire Elite, including Adam Cole, come out for a promo. Adam Cole actually comes out and kicks Tony Schiavone to the curb, and basically said, if I even catch you looking at Britt Baker the wrong way, I will knock those glasses right off your face. So obviously they're already touching base on the fact that Britt Baker and Adam Cole are in a relationship. They also ended up having more promos, basically Adam Cole giving praise to himself, being once in a generation type of wrestler, the Young Bucks being the best tag team in the world, even losing their tag team titles, and Kenny Omega being another once in a generation type wrestler, and being the best. And then Kenny Omega goes to make a comment about the celebration and then how he hates being interrupted. And then lo and behold, we have Bryan Danielson who comes out to the ring. Kenny Omega clears the ring, and he and Bryan Danielson go back and forth on the microphone for a minute. Well, actually, Bryan Danielson just rips the microphone from him. Looks like we're about to go and get a fight between them, and Kenny Omega tries to strike Bryan Danielson, who puts him immediately in the lapel lock. The entire Elite just jump right on top of Bryan and start beating him down, and then this actually brings out Jurassic Express, Frankie Kazarian, and Christian to make the save. So obviously we're going to have a huge war that's going to erupt soon. Time will tell on how big this war really will get and what they're going to end up going with. Eventually, I think they will go into a Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega fight for the title, very possibly a Full Gear. We'll see how that goes. And then I actually wish that my counterpart here would have been still on. The final moment of this was John Moxley getting the win over Minoru Suzuki in a very hard-hitting match. He actually wound up telling me before that he liked the match itself. He just wished that it would have been longer. For me, it was not really my cup of tea. I mean, it was a good match. I'm just not really, I don't know. I wasn't as entertained by it as most people. Maybe it's because I don't really know Minoru Suzuki that well. Most of the New Japan guys that they've been bringing in to go against John Moxley, I'm not really that familiar with, and maybe that's probably my fault for not being as familiarized with them as I could be. But it's not wasted on me. It's bringing entertainment value for other fans who know the New Japan product. And it's trying to introduce the New Japan product to the United States fans as well, by bringing them against someone who has the utmost respect for the Japanese wrestlers and John Moxley. I'm actually kind of interested to see how this ends up going. It does look like they're going to probably do, because I saw something with Lance Archer online. So they may end up doing a Lance Archer, Minoru Suzuki versus John Moxley, and you know, maybe another partner of his choosing. Maybe it's Eddie Kingston, maybe it's somebody else, who knows. Time will tell. All I know is I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out on Rampage tonight. So until next time, I'm author Andrew Hess, my counterpart Justin DeFrancisco, and find out what's on tap.